Steve. Looking pretty rough, man. I don't know if you can hear me. From the moment you arrived. Way back then, we were so young. You saved me. I survived because I knew I wasn't alone. You were always there, alive, full of hope. And I tried to protect that, and I failed. I couldn't protect you. But you didn't abandon me. You didn't abandon me. And although that field back there was looking pretty good. There's no way in hell I'm gonna abandon you. You are the only real superpower I ever had.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is Moon Knight Cast Episode 6.
This week, we're covering Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 6, Gods and Monsters.
And then it's done. That could be it. Yeah, could be the season finale. Could be the series finale. Do you think Moon Knight will come back in some form or another with Oscar Isaac in the role?
I don't see how it doesn't. It was a fantastic show. It was super well received.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal and a star. So, you know, I mean, they've got everything they need. The question is, you know, how is he going to come back? You know,
I hope you're right. I mean, there's things about him sometimes being like, man, Star Wars really burnt me out. I don't know if I want to get involved in another big franchise commitment. But I think he really did enjoy playing this part too.
Yeah, that may be. I haven't read anything about him being negative about it. But I mean, the show's—it's one of my points. But the show is labeled a miniseries, so yeah. It's implied that it was, you know, one and done.
But the director seems to hold out hope that Marvel will.
Yeah, I read that too.
Season. Yeah,
Mohamed Diab, and he said it's totally open, not decided if there'll be a second season, a movie. Mm-hmm. Or he'll just be in with films with other heroes. And I think that's definitely, all of those things are true. I think the question really probably they're thinking about now is whether we should do another season in addition to all the other plans we have for him. You know what I mean?
Right. And they definitely have more to explore, as we'll get into with the character, you know. But before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to mention a couple of things. First off, if you did not stick around for the post-credit scene in this episode, you should probably just pause and go watch it right now.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah, you missed like probably the most important part of the entire series.
Yeah.
If you didn't
if you don't watch this, then me and Kirk look like total idiots, so you should go watch it.
That's no guarantee I'm still not going to look like an idiot.
A little less.
I kind of got that cornered. I got that market cornered.
And then second thing I want to mention is Kirk finished his tribute poster for episode 2. It looks fantastic. I thought it looked even better than the first one.
Oh, and, thanks.
Really cool.
Appreciate that.
I put it up on facebook.com/podcastica, but you can also, I don't know if it's there yet, but Kirk's site is studiokm.com.
Yeah, I tweeted it on Twitter and out on Instagram, but I haven't put it on my website yet. But I will try to do that this weekend.
It'll be up there.
I'm going to reach out to everybody listening. Please pester me, whether it's on the Facebook group or tweet me or whatever, because I'm going to need some motivation to keep going. I want to get them all done.
Yeah.
But it's taking, you know, I've got a lot of other stuff going on right now, so it's kind of hard to get to. But I need, you know, the episodes, these podcast episodes have helped motivate me. So not having those after this will, I'll need some help.
Okay. So if you want those, what is your Twitter? Batman Cam?
Yeah.
Batman Cam. Get him on there. Go to his website. What's your address? Just kidding. and also I just wanted to mention,
you can always email me through my website.
Yeah. Email
through
website.
There's a link there.
StudioKM.com. And speaking of StudioKM.com, I realized I kind of dropped the ball. Like, I should have been mentioning StudioKM.com every single episode, at least at the end. I have been putting it in the show notes, but...
Yeah, you're a shitty host.
I know. Everyone, go check out StudioKM.com and see Kirk has so many amazing pieces up there.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
But I have been putting in the show notes. Okay, let's get into this week's episode, Moon Knight, Season 1, Episode 6, Gods and Monsters. In general, how did you feel about this one?
Oh, it was fantastic. In fact, I found this one a little bit more difficult for me to come up with stuff to talk about because it tied up so much and was, you know, a lot of the points we've been talking about every week were just kind of completed and then also it was just fun to watch. It was just, right. I just kind of enjoyed seeing all of these storylines, you know, come to fruition. And so, it was, you know, I thought it was excellent. How about you?
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was kind of like the whole series had been setting up these dominoes and they just knocked them all down here. You know, it wasn't too surprising, but it was very cool and very satisfying. A lot of it we predicted from the start, like Hera would be Amit's avatar and fight Mike in the end. I mean, Mark in the end and stuff. But it was very cool to watch. And I was a little disappointed and surprised that they didn't go into the Jake stuff hardly at all. But on the other hand, it really left the door open for some cool stuff later on. And it's kind of cool that, and we'll talk about Jake more, I'm sure, but that if they weren't going to have the bandwidth to really go into him fully, then just leave it for another time, you know?
Oh, I disagree. I think that I thought that the way they handled it in the end made the way that they handled it during the season make sense for me. One, two, it was a fantastic twist. And if they had gone into Jake more during the season, it would not have been.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, the flip side for me is we didn't get to see Jake in action, really. I mean, I know you
we
think
did.
You
we
saw
did,
Jake
though.
More than I think we saw Jake, but we didn't get to see him on his murdering sprees, you know? And maybe because it's a Disney show, that might be one reason why they left that to the imagination.
Well, it might have also been somewhat strategic in that, like you're saying, because it's the Disney shows, but then when they go into the movies, they will be able to do that more. You know what I mean?
Right. I heard the Moon Knight movie is rated NC-17, so that should be cool. Lots of just gore. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. No, it could be darker, though, yeah.
Maybe Sam Raimi is going to do it.
I can't wait. I haven't seen... Did you see
I'm going
Doctor
tonight.
Strange? Yeah,
I'm going tonight.
I'm going tonight or tomorrow, for sure.
Yeah, I'm going tonight.
Looking forward to it.
I'm not excited to be sitting in a movie theater on a Saturday night stuffed with COVID patients, but... That's just
most people are vaxxed and boosted these days, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I'll have a mask on. That's
all right. What's your first point?
First point was, I kind of called Layla, but it wasn't just me. Everybody in the world was pretty much kind of saying this is going to happen, but I was glad to see it happen. There have been other times when they've led us a certain way, you know, like the Mephisto stuff.
And, that's and one didn't, I didn't get at all. You came up with that and I wasn't thinking that at all, so good job.
Well, they did it a little different, and I think the way they did it was really cool. I thought it was going to be this Crimson Scarab person that's going to be tied into, or hero, that's tied into the Scarab, you know, MacGuffin that they had. But I think what they actually did with Tamarat, you taking her as an avatar was even cooler. You know,
but do you think, I mean, she did have a little like scarab on her chest, so maybe it's sort
of a
combination.
Oh yeah, she definitely, the scarab was integrated into her suit, so they were paying homage to that. But I thought it was cooler because we had been introduced to the hippo character and I loved her. I thought she was great. And so it was cool. So we kind of got to keep both these characters,
to team up.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have as your... Who would you rather be the avatar of? Amit, Tawaret, or Khonshu?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, definitely not Amit. Probably Tamarit, you know. Khonshu's some scary shit. You know what I mean? He's an a-hole. Even though he's doing the right thing with the, you know, going after people who have just chosen to be bad, as opposed to, you know, what Amrit's doing. But I just like the hippo a lot. I thought she was really cool.
Yeah.
I thought also the thing with her power coming from the being an avatar, it kind of gives them an out for her. So that moving on, she could not be a superhero, mm-hmm. or she could be, or
she said
could
she
be
wanted it to be temporary.
Yeah, or it could also be a different god, because now all those gods that we met lost all their avatars.
Yeah, did they? You know do I mean? They all die?
The avatars did. Yeah, all of in them? The in the tomb. That well, all the ones that we got to meet, they weren't okay. all there. Obviously, a bunch of them were in statues, and I think uh-huh. others were not just there, but. There was, I think, half a dozen of them. But okay. yeah, the ones that were there when Ahmet came up, yeah, destroyed. But that was just the avatars, not the god, I guess.
Right.
I got a question with regards to Layla. Are they actually divorced? I'd have to go back and look.
No, I think it was in progress, right? They haven't.
Yeah, it was like he said something about the papers. He had sent her papers. Mm-hmm. But you have to sign the papers, all have to be signed.
Yeah, he hadn't signed it.
Which is kind of interesting because then he's still married, which is kind of cool.
That's good. But it means like polyamory or what?
What do you mean?
Because she's married to two guys, sort of.
Well, one guy, two souls. How about that?
Yeah. What so if what he changes right in the middle of?
yeah, right.
Hello.
or she could choose. Tonight I feel like a little Mark. Tomorrow night I feel like a little Steven.
Right. How about Jake?
Yeah, well, no, we don't do Jake. Leave Jake alone.
To each their own. I don't kink shame.
That's right. That's what the kinky part of the closet's for. That's the Jake corner. Okay, go ahead.
Well, about her, I thought the costume was awesome. I love those brassy wings, and she can slice at people and block bullets.
Yep.
And I liked that moment where the girl asked if she was an Egyptian superhero, and she said, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting how people kept pushing her to be an avatar, Tauret first, then Khonshu wants her to be his, and then the dying Osiris avatar says Ammit needs to be trapped in a human body and we need more avatars. And so she said, okay, I'll do it, but it's only temporary because she doesn't want to be a slave like Mark was. Right. So
well, she also perceived the process the way that Mark works with Khonshu, but obviously not all avatars have that kind of relationship.
Maybe she will like it and decide to keep going with it, but... Anyway, pretty cool. And her seeing her in action was really cool.
Oh, it was awesome. I love the flying and the defensive use of the wings, but also the offensive use of the wings. It was really cool.
Right.
I also think that the possession, the avatar concept justifies the quick abilities. You know, in other words, that she doesn't have to have. Some people are like, oh, my gosh, you know, how could she possibly be this good at this? Although she had some basic skills. That's what they established in the beginning of the series, you know, when she fights and everything else.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you're being possessed by a god. So she's the god's at the wheel. You know what I mean?
I think both of those are relevant, though, because Steven at first was pretty shitty as an avatar.
Yeah.
But now that he's more balanced with Mark, then now he can use his batons. Well, I think that's why. But she already had some fighting ability, and so all that's just amplified, I guess.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. I will start with Ammit, who I was glad to see. I was glad she had a big part. I thought she looked pretty fantastic. Very creepy to see this big giant alligator person.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, I thought the CG was amazing on her, and that she was clearly looked like a crocodile, but there was something that was very almost attractive about, you know what I mean, or pleasant about the face. You know, they did a really good job.
See, no kink shaming here. I said,
yeah, amen, right? But you know, or maybe it was just that she looked feminine, even though she looked like a crocodile, you know, which was kind of well done, you know. They didn't overdo it, but they didn't underdo it either. So it was good.
And the way she moved kind of slowly.
Yeah. And the hair, too. The hair was wild.
Yeah. Great look. And I love the, she had that purple plume of purple smoke that turned into her glowing purple. But all Harrow had to do was break that Ushabti to release her. I thought, oh, that seems a little too easy, but I think he had to do it in the Chamber of Gods. That's why he went there.
Yeah, and exactly.
By the way, we did, I think that really did confirm for sure that the Chamber of Gods is in the middle of the Pyramid of Giza because he like parted the bricks to get in there.
But that doesn't mean that when you go through there and into there, like you're not doorway. Being trans, you're not, you're not inside that cube in space, you know what I mean? Or and wherever that dimension is that they
are. The other void or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Could, we never know. So Amit has the same argument that with Khonshu that Harrow was having with Mark basically earlier in the series.
I think it was Steven.
Steven. Right. There's so little difference in what we want for this world. Why do this dance for the rest of time?
Right.
And they are similar. They both want to rid the world of evil, and they use others for help, like as their avatars. But the only difference is Amit kills people before they can commit evil. And I mean, it's the same conversation again, but I'll go a little bit like we talked about it. But if she really can know that someone's going to commit evil, and it's something bad enough that Khonshu would kill them for doing, then I could see the argument that it's better. I mean, whether you agree with capital punishment or not, let's just take it for granted that
this is the go back in time and kill Hitler's baby as a baby.
Then isn't it better to kill before they do it? I can see that. Like, what if the bad thing that the person was going to do is like to kill your relative or something, then of course you'd want them take it off the table before they have a chance to do that.
The only caveat there would though would be, you know, is there no way to avoid that outcome other than destroying? In other words, like is time written in stone and you can't change this?
Right. And the fact that they're talking about choice suggests that things are not predetermined. Right?
Correct.
Because
exactly.
that's what Khonshu says, because it's my choice, the very thing that you take away.
Right.
So
exactly.
They didn't spell it out, but if things are predetermined, then who cares about choice, because choice is an illusion. But I guess that would suggest that. And but there another little wrinkle here is some people who do evil also do a lot of good. Like it was interesting when Harrow said if Amit was allowed to pass her judgment earlier, then Mark's brother would have been saved, which is but Mark has done a lot of good, and maybe it's worthwhile, you know, to lose one person over. I don't know. That's like when you talk philosophy, it can get into some.
Well, I thought the interesting thing, and I think I'm probably stealing this from Ryan Neary, but he had made a correlation between Amit and Mark's mother, and that once this thing had happened in there, once the death of Randall happened and she blamed him, that was it. He was done.
Yeah.
He was just a child, but his future was done. He was evil. He was bad, and he was going to forever be bad.
I think that's a little different though, because that's just, judging someone unfairly for something that they already did. It's not like, I don't think she cared what he would do in the future. She wasn't saying, you're going to do a bunch of bad things.
I don't know. I see similarities, because it's kind of like she wrote him off. And said, there's never going to be any good that comes from you. Therefore, you're dead
to me,
essentially.
Did she say that, though?
No, she didn't. She just said, at the funeral, she said.
I think basically she was just like, I hate you because you took away my son, you know.
Right, but I think the result is that she just treated him like, she knew he was this evil, worthless thing that was never going to do any good. And that's kind of counter, you know, kind of like Amit.
Yeah,
she's,
kind of.
You know,
I mean,
if you're
going
to be bad, then you're bad. So you have to go. To your point, you could do a lot of good before you do your bad. You know what I mean? But for me, the big issue is if you know that someone does this evil, this bad, that's worth killing them for, and you know it now, 30 years before it's going to happen, then if you have those powers, then you should be able to have the power to be able to go in and adjust whatever happened in their life that caused them to create that evil rather than just killing them now.
Right. Yeah. And I get, my point is, if there's no way, no matter what, to prevent the thing from happening, then Amit kind of makes sense to me. But if there is, and Khonshu's focus on choice suggests that there is, then that means, yeah, she's wrong.
And I think the other thing that's great is that that sets up a dichotomy in the way that we look at Khonshu, because he's clearly a dick. He's clearly manipulative and evil in his own way. But he is right about choice, and that people have to, you know, be able to make their own choice. And that in that way, he's on target. So it's tough. Mm-hmm. Makes it kind of mixed in how you feel about him, which I like.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, some people would argue capital punishment is never okay.
Correct.
And I can respect that, but yes.
Yeah, I do too.
I also, but
I'm going to qualify that. I agree. And I don't support capital punishment, but only because we are flawed and our justice system is flawed. And in this scenario, what we're talking about here in fantasy, these gods can see the absolute truth of what's going to happen. Know what I mean? So that's different. And so it makes it a little bit more difficult to be against it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, seeing the truth of what's going to happen versus is different than judging someone's action to be evil enough that they deserve to be killed.
So you don't think anybody could do anything that's worth them being killed?
I'm not saying that. I didn't tell you my position on capital punishment. I'm just saying some people don't like it. That's complicated for me. I think probably there's too much capital punishment, but there are probably cases where it's justified. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm against it because I think that there's just too many flaws in
like
the system.
Accuse someone unfairly. Like they didn't actually do it.
Exactly. And people constantly get locked away, for the wrong reason.
So hopefully a god actually knows.
And we find out 20 years later when DNA evidence can prove that they were innocent, you know, well, thank God we didn't kill them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's always been my grounds for not supporting it. Plus I feel like people need to contribute. If you're going to take a life, then you should have to dedicate your life should be forfeit, not in the terms of just death, but it should be somehow you should be giving back. That your life should be somehow contributing to the good of society. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is there.
But I just want to go back and point out that I mentioned the parallel between Amit and Mark's mother before Ryan Airy did. So, Ryan Airy.
Oh, excellent. Good
I
for you.
I think he listens to the podcast. Hey, Ryan.
Just kidding. Excellent. No, well, then my props to you. Then I agree with you. I thought it was a cool connection, and I forgot that you...
And then last thing I want to mention about Amit is that, you know, they decide, okay, instead of trapping her soul in another one of these little statues, if they trap her in a human... then they kill the human. Apparently that kills the god. I don't know that they definitively said that, but that seemed to be the case.
Well, I think there's a difference between possession and using a person as an avatar and trapping them inside.
But it's just surprising to me that there's a way to kill a god, you know?
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
And so Layla, I guess, learns this spell from Taweret, and it seemed kind of occult, but it worked, and they trapped Amit in Harrow, and then Khonshu told Mark to kill Harrow and Amit, and Mark refused. And I thought that was dumb. That was like the one part of the episode that I thought was kind of dumb, and it was just kind of forced so they could have this Jake moment at the end, because Mark has killed plenty of people. And if there's one person, if he's going to kill the people that he has killed, or at least we think he has, maybe it was Jake the whole time, but we think, you know, he has, right? Because he mentioned he killed all those people that were in that room in the asylum that looked like zombies. So, like, who deserves it more than Amit, who has killed probably millions?
I don't know. I don't think it was just set up for the ending. I think it's also his whole journey has been about, you know, taking charge of his own life and making his own decisions and not doing just what Khonshu tells him or what, you know, the society tells him, whatever, coming, you know, having his own code of ethics and standing by them. And yeah, Layla and Steven have been a big part of establishing that with him. And so I saw that as being consistent with the character.
It didn't make sense to me. I mean, I can understand wanting to make your own choice, but it bothers me when people don't do something just because someone told them to, even if it's the right thing to do, you know, it's like, make the choice to do the thing that this guy you don't like is also wanting you to do. But then as far as whether it was the right choice, it just, to me, if he's the kind of guy, well, I guess maybe he didn't want to kill any of those people that he killed, and he only did it because Khonshu made him.
Yeah. And he tried throughout the season. There were multiple times when he had the opportunity to kill, and he chose not to, either because Steven helped talk him out of it, or he realized he didn't want to do it, or whatever.
Okay. I guess I'm coming around a little bit more. If all those people that he killed, he didn't really want to, but he felt like he was a slave and he had to. Now he's asserting himself and saying no, but right. Is this the right time to do it? Right. What if this God came back to life and killed everybody?
Yeah, right. Exactly. The other two quick points I had on Ahmet's the fight scene with her and the everything. The CGI fight scene inside the tomb I thought was pretty bad. Between her and Khonshu. I thought that, you know, it's really hard when you're taking these large creatures, you know, whether it be the Hulk in the Avengers movies or whatever, and getting it, especially when they're fighting and smashing into walls and effectively getting that sense of weight.
Yeah.
And
it looks like a cartoon.
It's in the actual space that they're actually, you know, in that space. And there were a couple sequences there where Khonshu looked like he was made of rubber as he's flying and stuff. But once it went outside, and I don't know if it's because the lighting wasn't that different, it was still dark inside too, but somehow outside the action was much more.
They were bigger. I wonder if that had something to do
with
it.
Maybe the scale. I don't know. They were moving slower. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was it, because they do that with when they do Giant Man in the Avengers and stuff. He moves really slow because I guess it's a perception based on their size. I don't know.
Yeah. It takes more to swing that heft around or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe gravity's slowing him down. Yeah. But anyway, I thought the fight scene out there was really good, but the inside one bothered me. And then when they're fighting in the background, like these two, like Godzilla versus Kong. Meanwhile, Moon Knight and Layla are fighting Hera on the streets. And it was just really cool. I've never seen that done before. I thought that was really, really cool.
It's the gods fighting and their avatars fighting each other. Yeah. If only the Tauret was in there.
I mean, it happens in the comics. Stuff like that's done in the comics a lot. Yeah. But to see it live action was really cool.
I agree. I thought that was very cool effect. I loved it. Okay, next point.
I loved how Mark's choice to go back was not to save Layla or stop Harrow or, you know, become Moon Knight again and be a superhero just because it's the right thing to do. Right. But it was instead to get Steven. Yeah. I just thought that was really, really cool. And Tamrat tells, I know I'm just bastardizing all these names and I apologize, but anyway, Tamrat tells Mark that he's attained true peace and that there's no more danger. But Mark's not at peace knowing that Steven is suffering. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because Steven had saved him all his life from suffering. I mean, that's how he escaped his suffering, was Steven. And now he was in this, you know, he had finally reached a point where he was never going to have to suffer again. But it was going to mean that Steven was stuck suffering the rest of his life or the rest of his existence or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't take that. I just thought that was really beautiful and a great way to wrap this up and to not be conventional, you know.
Yeah,
it's very different. Oh, I got to go back and be the hero and save the world. No, you know, this was... Yeah.
Or the girl,
right.
Yeah, this is a story, this whole thing is a story about inner conflict and things like that, and also dissociative identity disorder. And
right.
So the scene between Mark and Steven where he's like, there's no way in hell I'm going to abandon you. You're the only real superpower I ever had. I found really touching. Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. And that another twist on that too, is that because we got to see Steven and because there were two hearts and we got to see Steven and Mark together out of body, you know, there's an also implied possibility that Mark now hosts two spirits or souls,
mm-hmm.
and that, or that his soul has become, you know, split off.
Ryan Airy said the fact that they manifest as two different people in the underworld suggests that there's two souls there.
Right. And I think I agree with him on that. And I think that, you know, without Steven, he's not a whole, you know, so he would never have true peace. So that was cool.
The only question that brings up to me, and I've had the same question, maybe we should save this question, but I'll just mention it now, is the fact that there's no questioning that Jake is another one of the personalities. How does that fit in with his heart having been balanced? And it feels like there's a disconnect there to me. All the stuff you were saying about
season two,
about season two. Mark had been, had accepted Jake's role in his life and all that. I don't think that's true. I don't think Mark knew about
it's true
Jake,
either.
Right?
I don't think so.
I feel like it's a little bit of a plot hole.
That theory missed. That missed. I was wrong.
But you were trying to explain this, what I think is a plot hole, you know?
Yeah.
They can do some comic booky.
I think it is. It is a slight plot hole, I think. I agree. I think it's a slight plot hole. But it also does, I think, set up nicely for future story.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
give them a chance to explain.
Mark has to come to terms with and realize that he needed Jake as much as he needed Steven.
I mean, if it wasn't for Jake, they may have failed.
Absolutely.
Errol is about to kill Mark.
Yep. And if it wasn't for Jake, all those times when he got beaten too, he mm-hmm. would never have survived probably. So,
right.
He had to become hardened like that. So again, he owes a lot to both of those personality aspects. But that sets up a whole nother series or a whole nother season
story.
Or another movie. Yeah. I liked, Neary's comment too about the choice of the song, The End by Earl Grant. In the beginning, it opens up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, cause the end of the story makes sense, but there's some lyrics in it where he points out, it says, "Our love is a story that never ends." He argues that this is not about the love that never ends in reference to the show is not about Mark and Layla, but instead Mark and Steven.
Yeah.
That was cool. Yeah. I liked that a lot.
Another thing that I'm a little confused about is, okay, so last episode we saw they were in the underworld. Tauret saw a bunch of souls entering the underworld, kind of panicked. Oh my gosh, Amon is out. We need to do something. We could send you back to take care of it, but then your body would be dead. So we need to free conch you to heal you. That was the plan. And then they got to the Field of Reeds, and Amon, Tauret, even in this episode, spoke to Layla through this like Weekend at Bernie's dead body, which is kind of funny. You need to go free Conchu and bring Mark back to life. But yet in the afterlife, we saw Mark in the Field of Reeds, and Tauret seems to be trying to convince him to stay there forever and be at peace. How does that align? How do those two things align?
Well,
if Tauret wants Mark to go back and prevent Amit from killing all these souls, then why is Tauret trying to convince Mark to stay in the afterlife and be at peace?
Because he has to make the choice. It has to be his choice. It's all about choice.
It wasn't presented as a choice. She seemed to be urging him. I guess.
I don't know. I saw it as because choice.
Remember last week I was saying, why is he in the Field of Reeds? And you were like, well, this is just where he's waiting before it's time to go back. But then this episode, she's like, it seemed like she was trying to get him to stay there, and he went back for Steven instead. And she's told him, you can't ever come back here. So he did make a pretty big choice, but I guess there's plenty of other afterlives he can go to in the Marvel universe.
Yeah. He can go hang out with T'Challa.
Yeah. Anything else about that, Mark and Steven?
No, just that I now realized listening to you that I've been saying Tamaret and it's Tauret.
Tauret.
So
yeah.
I changed W's to M's. No, my next point was about the ending, and then I had a couple little notes.
Okay, well, it's my turn. So I want to talk about Hera, who achieved his goal, freed Amit. And I feel like I suspected this whole time that Hera really thought he was going to be healing the world. He thought he was sincere the whole time in his belief that cleansing the world of bad people would be the best thing. And, you know, when he holds up Amitsu Shabdi before he lets her out, he says, "Who wants to heal the world?" But what was interesting is how much he seemed very, in a way, in the same way that Amit is similar to Khonshu, Hera is similar to Mark. In episode 3, he mentioned, you know, to Khonshu, "I enjoyed dealing pain out on your behalf," when he was Khonshu's avatar. "That is right. The greatest sin I carry. I'm grateful. Had you not broken me so completely, I might never have known the value of healing. I'm going to do what you could not. And when it's finished, I want you to remember one thing: your torment forged me." But what I didn't really catch from that is that he feels guilty, just like Mark, you know?
Mm.
And after he frees Amit, he's ready to accept Amit's judgment, which he's never had to be weighed himself or you know, on the scale, and die if necessary. And she says right away, "Your scales lack balance." And he says, "I understand. I had hoped my penance might correct my imbalance, but I see now that's impossible. I accept the scales regardless of the outcome, and that we must spare the world the pain I will cause." So he's fully just given to this cause that he's been promoting this whole time. And she's the one who's like, "Eh, I think, you know, you might serve me." Like, she's basically saying, "I really need a guy like you to serve me, so I'll delay your death." You know, it's like, yeah, right. We need to cleanse the world of killers except for the ones in my service.
Right, exactly. Her, she's got standards that are very self-motivated. Yeah.
Right. But he was pure in his devotion. But then he goes along with it, so maybe not so pure. And she says, you know, "Serve me and you will find peace." And that,
well, not only does he go along with it, but he did say to her, as you just reiterated, that he had hoped that you know, by letting her out and everything, that he would get, yeah, that she would, you know, take mercy on him, which she does.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
I don't know how guilty he is.
Yeah, that's true.
He's a little self-motivated too.
What did he say? He said, "I'd hope my penance might correct my imbalance." That's a little
right.
Vague. Like, maybe he thought that would balance the scales, but yeah.
Yeah,
but I
right.
think, I mean, when she says, you know, "Serve me and you will find peace," that made me think that's the main thing he wants. He's just, this whole experience with Khonshu just scarred him, and he's been trying to find peace ever since.
Yeah, and I hope that we get, I mean, I don't know if we will, but I wonder if we'll get some background on that in the future, you know, like,
yeah.
I was curious through the whole thing, what it was like when he was the avatar.
I presume it's like Mark, you know, he's got a room full of dead bodies too that he had to kill.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're going, he's dead.
And then also, how did he break free?
Yeah, we don't know that
part. You know what
part.
I mean? How did he manage to do that?
Right. I thought it was funny when Amit said, "I once relied on a servant whose scales balanced perfectly. In exchange, I was bound to stone for 2,000 years." So it's like, yeah, a good man would go for my shit, so I need you.
Right. That's right. It's kind of weird how they changed, though, the role of, is it Anubis, I think, who's the one that actually the judge of,
I think so, yeah,
and I don't know why they changed that, but
well, I think, I mean, I don't know either, but I just kind of presume. I mean,
why didn't they have Anubis instead of Tamret or Tamret or whatever
Amit.
The hell?
Yeah, so
the hippo.
Oh,
Tamret.
Yeah.
Why didn't they have Anubis play that role? I understand.
Well, Tamret wasn't judging souls either.
But she did on the boat. She puts the hearts on the scale and the feather and shit, man. She's
that's a good
doing
point.
All that shit.
What is Anubis's head?
He's like a it's not a it's an oh what the heck it's
is
not
it
a
like
wolf.
A dog a, or something? Yeah,
yeah. It's like a or a cat. It's like got a
maybe they just
big,
wanted a
big
hippo.
Tall ears. Yeah,
that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, what do you got next?
Well, here, I got just a couple of little points before I get to my ending comments. So Moon Knight flies now.
I think that's because the moon's full.
Moon was full. Yeah, exactly. But still,
they don't say it. But it looked cool.
It was kind of cool. It was cool, and it was also cool that Layla flied. So that you had two heroes flying around, whipping around, you know? Like, I'm used to Captain America and Falcon, you know, when Falcon's flying, Cap's on the ground, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
The battle in the street it was epic. And I thought the changing between the two versions of Moon Knight constantly, you know, to whatever, you know, was whoever was best suited at that second to fight, you know, or to get out of something that was going south, you know what I mean? It was so cool. So mm-hmm. cool. And then he's up in the air, and then he changes to Mr. Knight and he's plumbing into that. It was just, and then I love Mr. Knight's fighting style best. I mean, I think I like him better than the full Moon Knight, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
With the batons.
The batons, and it's more martial arts.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Moon Knight tends to be more just kind of knuckles and right. brutality.
Brawler,
yeah.
It was, I thought it was choreographed. It was very cool to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what more to say than that, but I liked it.
And I got a chuckle because people were complaining online, like, there's not enough Moon Knight in the Moon Knight series. Remember we talked last week about there's only 2 minutes of a minute or something like that so far. But then now people are complaining that, you know, the last episode was too much all about, you know, the action and the fights and the superheroes and stuff, and not enough about the whole mindscape and everything.
Right.
like come on. Nobody's ever happy. You know what I mean? It's like,
that's why, I love it when I'm podcasting about something, which is most of the time with the shows I pick, and I just really dig it and I get to kind of gush about it, you know?
Right.
It's good to put that out there to counteract all the nitpicky. I mean, we get nitpicky too, but yeah, you got to appreciate something for what it is.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this before. If you don't like something, or that you've got to be critical of it every week, why are you bothering to do a podcast on it?
Right. You know what I
mean? I never understood that. I mean, I think it's fair, and I think it's important to, you know, to be critical on things that are not done well or that could have been better. But if you're not enjoying the show, if all you've got is nothing but complaints and criticisms about it, I don't know.
Some people just like
maybe
to do
there's
that.
People out there who like to listen to that. You know,
yeah,
know.
There are for sure.
That's crazy.
But that's not what we're all about. The idea is to sort of celebrate and appreciate this thing that we're fans of, and we do.
Yeah, I mean, the other extreme is just as bad. People who just gush.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
I agree.
I mean, that's terrible. Just as bad. I'm not trying to say. Yeah, I'm not trying to say one is better than the other.
But if something is not what I expected or even hoped for, I do try to make an effort to appreciate it for what it is, you know, and not just be mad that it wasn't what I wanted it to be or something like that.
Yeah.
Anything else you got?
No, nothing. Then just my last point is the ending. So
okay, my last point is the ending too, but I'll let you have that. I mean, that's not my last point. I have another point. It's
so you can do your other point.
Yeah, I'll do my other point. It's some questions I had. Some I feel like I have answers to. Some I don't. Maybe we've already talked about all of these. Let's see. The thing about the scales being balanced with his heart, even though Jake exists, we addressed that. One thing we saw Khonshu talking to Steven/Mark in the desert in the daytime, and I was like, oh, he can exist in the day. We haven't seen that before. But then I remembered in the very first episode when Steven appeared in this field outside the village in the Alps, Khonshu was behind him. So we did see him in the day.
Yeah, he just doesn't. He has more power at night with the moon. Although the moon is out during the day, but
yeah, that's true. Times. Right.
Yeah. They didn't really go into that in detail.
No.
In the comic, I guess there's a lot more about the fact that not only is his power come from the moon, so when the moon's out, it's better, but like as the phases of the moon change, the level of abilities and power stay. Right. So like you said, when the moon was full, he could fly.
Yeah.
You know that he can't fly all the time.
They leave that for us Uber nerds to discuss, which I think is cool, but they don't just spell it all out. And and the moon is full in the credits too, by the way, it's been,
oh, and this, that's cool.
The whole time.
That's cool.
And then kind of related is throughout the series, most people can't see Khonshu, but here Layla can, and so can Harrow in the limousine at the end. And I wonder if that's just because Khonshu can make himself visible to whoever he wants.
Possibly. Neri had said that he thought it was because he wasn't attached to, because Mark was killed.
Mm-hmm.
He was no longer attached to Mark, so he could appear to anybody and start to kind of talk to them.
Got it.
But I mean, that's just a theory. I don't know. I think with Layla, he was making an appeal to have her become his avatar. Yeah,
but still, so, he would have to choose to make himself visible there, which he did. Exactly. Yeah. Like he did that to Mark in the first place. Or actually, I don't know. Maybe only when Mark agreed, did he then see Khonshu. I don't know.
When Harrow saw him, was that inside the tomb? Cause that could also be a possibility.
Right. No, it was in the tomb of the limo. It was his tomb.
Oh yeah. At the end. You're right. Well, his brain was pretty broken then too. And it seems like Khonshu has more ability to mess with people when their brain's broken.
Yeah. He was on drugs, you know what I mean? Or something.
Well, he's fucked up. He's got a fucking crocodile in his head. Fuck you
that's
up, man.
That's true. Yeah. That might have something to bad. Do with it. Right.
Crack and croc. Either one in your head's bad.
Now, one thing I thought once Amit came, she would just like be able to do a blanket judgment of the whole world, but when she came,
that would have fucked the story up, man.
It would have, but that's true. Good point. But the followers of Amit started judging everyone in Cairo, Harrow's followers. I guess Amit being freed just gave them that power, because before only Harrow could do that.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is Harrow was pretty indestructible on when they were fighting him, and that was because as she's getting stronger, as she's consuming more souls,
he's getting stronger too.
She's getting bigger, and then also her power and her influence is growing, so he's getting more powerful as well. And then the ability to do that is being passed on to the followers, and it's just kind of this expansion that's going on.
And then Harrow, when he went to the top of the pyramid with his purple tipped glowing staff, do you think he was getting ready to do a mass judgment like that?
Well, it did switch from the scales to an axe, as if he's about to deliver judgment. It seemed like maybe you know,
from a higher vantage point or something.
Yeah, maybe
because his staff did, you know, have that, like when we saw with the soldiers, I guess because he had Amit's Ushabdi, suddenly he could like pound it on the ground and judge everybody in the immediate vicinity all at once.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And as her power grew, that staff got even more powerful, and they were probably looking to consume everybody in Egypt, and then just with one fell swoop to the rest of the planet type of thing.
Yeah. And then the ending, not the Jake part, but before that, Mark tells Khonshu to release them, and then he will, you know, try to stop Amit, and he says, as you wish. Or no, that was after. That was the deal, and he did stop Amazon.
Yeah, that was the deal. We do this, and then you
wish.
Release us.
Then he wakes up in the hospital again with Dr. Harrow. And at first I thought, oh, wait, this is supposed to be the afterworld, so why is he here now? But I think that version of the asylum is just how he works things out in his head.
Yeah, I have that as a point as well. I definitely think that this established that the asylum is where
two versions.
It's a couple of things. Well, no, I think it was always in his head. I think that the fact that the top layer or the top level was, you know, the Egyptian boat and all that shit, that was just his consciousness, you know, reaching that level. But it still is all taking place inside of his brain.
Uh-huh.
Know what I mean?
I think the level where he's talking, like having sessions with Dr. Harrow, is more.
Yeah.
He could do that anytime, and it's in his head.
Correct.
But I think the part where he's meeting Tauret and seeing the underworld and all that is more connected to the underworld. Like, he could not just go back there now if he's not.
Well, yeah, but who's to say that our consciousness and this world of the gods are not connected?
I say that. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
You would say that. No, I think it's established that that's in his mind. And I think it also established that the this is where the personalities go when they're not in charge of the body.
Yeah. Which I think when I remember, it's been a while, but when I was watching videos on YouTube from people who have dissociative identity disorder, they did talk about places in their mind like that, that they could go to.
Yeah. And I think that that's really cool because it means we're going to always get appearances of the asylum, you know, and we're going to get these consciousness deep dives whenever we see, have Moon Knight. When you have Moon Knight, you're going to, you know, this is going to be an aspect of that character now, which is really cool. Instead of being just an aspect of this series.
He may have a different therapist if they can't get Ethan Hawke.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
he retired. So then he's back in, you know, he's like realizes that this is not real. And so then he wills himself to wake up and he's back strapped to his bed and there's two fish. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like they're just trying to fuck with us a little bit and make us like, why would he be strapped to his bed? And why are there two fish? I can't really.
What are you talking about? Are you busting me? Are you like,
no, I don't get it. Okay. Explain it to me.
I think that this episode establishes very clearly that they both recognize that there is a third entity that they're not aware of, that they're not in control of, that they don't have a connection to.
Oh, so they're trying to.
They're still, right. So we start off with this scenario where he's chaining himself to the bed because it's Stephen trying not to become Mark. Now we've got Stephen and Mark doing it to themselves so they don't become whatever this third person is, Jake.
Oh, that makes sense. And maybe there's two fish just because they've come to terms that there's two guys in there, so they each get a fish.
Correct. Yeah. So we need. So like the bottom line is we need an ending in the future where there's a fish tank with three fish.
Okay. Are both the fishes named Gus, or did Mark get to name his fish?
Gus 1, Gus 2? I don't know. Does one of them have is missing a fin? That's Stevens.
Right.
That's Jake's. Okay. No, that one's Jake's. Yeah, he probably ripped it off.
Just for you. Okay. I guess that's all I had for all my questions. So why don't you go into your
we hit on a lot of it already. So, but I just thought it was a fantastic twist to the ending. Again, you know, I think we were partially correct on Jake being, you know, the killer. Obviously we guessed that, but I don't think either of us saw that, you know, I think I made the argument last week that perhaps Mark has an arrangement with Jake already. And that's because I was trying to solve that plot line hole.
The wing of the hearts,
why are there two hearts, right? Two hearts. And, but I think that it's cooler the way they did it. The fact that Khonshu and he have an arrangement.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome twist.
Yeah, because Mark and Steven both agreed to get away, but Jake can bring them right back to being the Avatar. It's self-sabotage.
Right. So it's a wonderfully cool twist because they don't, I'm just repeating what you're saying, but they both, Mark and Steven, think they're free.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, they're not only not free, they're like just going and doing the worst things that they would do. You know what I mean? At least when they were with him, they did lots of good things. You know what I mean? Now it's just the bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's tragic for them. Awesome for us.
Yeah.
And bad for
whoever Khonshu thinks is a bad guy. So, I thought that was cool. Jake just seems freaking seriously psychopathic or sociopathic. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just
because he killed the guy behind the counter at the.
Oh, he just kills everybody. He killed half the people in the freaking asylum just to get to the guy.
Yeah,
as they're wheeling him out, you're seeing all these dead bodies, all this blood flying all over the place.
Doesn't care. Yeah,
he doesn't care.
So what does that say about Khonshu?
Khonshu doesn't care either. Khonshu's like.
So we were just talking before about capital punishment's okay if you have this god who knows for sure if the person did evil, but now he's like, just kill anyone who gets in your way.
Well, Khonshu's hung up on this guy's really bad and has to be taken care of. Doesn't matter what happens in between. You know, do whatever you got to do to get it done. No, it's definitely not good. We agree. Khonshu's a dick.
Yeah.
I seriously hope, although I don't think it's going to happen, but I seriously hope we get a different costume or suit for Jake
We have to.
I don't think we will. I mean, unless it's a variation of the main Moon Knight one, that would be kind of cool.
They've already established that Moon Knight and that Mark and Steven have such different costumes. I think even though this doesn't happen in the comics, I would guess in the MCU, Jake will get his own.
Well, there's been some different variations. As I did a little research, there've been a couple different variations and looks. A lot of different artists have interpreted the Moon Knight costume differently. Mm-hmm. One that I've seen, the pigeon head skull is actually part of it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I could see them do something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be kind of cool.
More, yeah, menacing, I would say.
Less mummy-esque, you know, and it's the way that it's drawn. It's more almost like samurai costume with the pigeon heads as a helmet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
I can see that.
So, yeah, hopefully they will. I hope they do.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. I mean, I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah. You know? Well,
the Jake twist.
Yeah. I would say that there's evidence that this is the first time we've actually seen Jake when he's in control of the body.
And, I don't know. Maybe.
And
maybe
we thought that when he was in the asylum with his broken nose and his New York accent, that was Jake. I mean,
right. But that was in the head, which meant he wasn't in the body. If you're going to take the theory you said about the asylum being when you're not in charge.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess I don't know for sure, of course, but I still don't know if that was Jake because, I think Mark just might talk like that when he's agitated.
No,
because
no, definitely not. Definitely
well,
not.
I think so. You think not. I think so. And so,
but
it's
you're
okay
wrong,
that
man,
we
I'm
have
right.
different opinions about stuff sometimes, but, because here he's speaking, you know, Spanish and that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Maybe when he speaks English, he has a New York accent. Sometimes he speaks Spanish. But I felt like the choice to have him speak Spanish was a pretty clear, like differentiation, like, okay, you're now seeing Jake. You haven't seen him before. Here he is.
Yeah. Maybe,
but there have been like, 3 Oscar Isaac reflections in mirrors. So I think we did see Jake in mirrors up until now throughout the whole series, you know, I guess that's,
well, he's definitely been there. It's just that they blacked out so we didn't get to see him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah.
Right.
Every time they woke up and there was dead bodies around and they're like, did you do that? No, that was
Jake.
Right. For sure. Yeah. No question about that. I guess that's all I had to say about that. So do you have any more like random notes or anything?
No, that was it. I mean, I just thought it was a great conclusion to the series. I was not disappointed. Lots of times, the buildup is not delivered. And I thought that this series delivered on the buildup, maybe best of all of the series. I mean, I'm not sure I would rank this as number one for me so far, but it definitely is in my top three. Mm-hmm. Certainly the conclusion, I think it was the most effective in leaving a lot of threads and then, like you said, tipping the dominoes, you know, at the end.
I would still,
WandaVision,
the rest of Hawkeye. Yeah. And What If too. I really loved What If, but
oh yeah. Yeah. What If was great. What If delivered as well, but I almost kind of see that separately. And bias on my part, I guess, because it's animated, you know.
Yeah,
I almost kind of see that as different than these others, but no, you're right, it did.
It's just hard for me to rank those three though. What If, WandaVision and Moon Knight, I thought were all just so fantastic.
Yeah
And I like,
I mean, I loved them all. There hasn't been any that
America
I haven't liked
too, or,
yeah, I thought Falcon Winter Soldier was fantastic. I would love to see a series with just Bucky. I think he's I think he's fantastic character.
He's so good,
incredibly.
In that,
oh, and he too. Was fantastic. Yeah, Sebastian Stan's just he's just totally owns that role.
Very good actor in that role.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a little nervous about this new one, the Marvels or Ms. Marvel. But, I think it's good that there'd be a lot of different styles and takes and stuff, you know, just like comics. And so I look forward to that. But
yeah, that's one thing I really appreciated about Moon Knight was just the mind fuck aspect to it was so different than what we've seen before, unless you watch Legion. Okay. So I just have a couple of random notes. When Mark/Steven wakes up in his flat chained to his bed and you hear that same song, every day I wake up, then I start to break up. That reminds me of Russian Doll. Did you see that on Netflix?
Oh, I love that series. I haven't watched the second season yet.
Me neither.
But I love the first season.
But with
Harry,
Nilsson, so gotta get up.
Such great.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch the second season.
My daughter started watching the second season. She said it's just as good, if
that's
not better.
That's what I've heard, that it might be better.
Yeah.
I like that Harrow at the end is in the Senkevich Psychiatric Hospital. After Bill Sienkiewicz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a nice little tip of the hat. Yeah.
He's an artist, for people who don't know, who has this really, like, how would you describe his style? It's very, very different. Inky and...
Yeah, and he does a lot of stuff with, like, spackle, or not spackle, but spray. And and it's very painterly and I don't want to say abstract, but...
It doesn't look like your typical comic book art.
Exaggerated a little bit.
No, I found it.
It looks more like kind of illustration.
And like, you know? Yeah, I found it really ugly when I first saw it, when he took over New Mutants. Like, what the hell? Yeah. But then it really grew on me until I loved it.
It's cool. I mean, I've liked some things better than others. You know, he did a series, Lectra, in the 80s. That was fantastic.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a little too... I don't want to say abstract.
Yeah.
But you know, I tend to gravitate. My style is more trying to be realistic,
sure.
And I gravitate to those kinds of artists, but I do appreciate some of the artists that, and he's one of them that breaks a lot of those rules and messes with, page layouts,
And
anatomy
and body
shapes, right? Exactly. And he does, he's got a cool, and I love his illustration. If you look him up at all, he does some amazing portraits of famous people and stuff.
Captures emotion just, really well.
Yeah. And they just, they exactly. And, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
So he's good. He's good. He's local, you know, he's right around here. He lives right near me here.
That's cool. Anyways, one thing, my last note is something from Ryan Airy that I thought was cool. He said the three alters of Mark, Steven, and Jake represent Freud's concept of the id, ego, and superego.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that's really cool.
Mark's the ego, which is basically the behaviors you present to most people in the world. Steven's superego, which is moral, ethical values, and parental stuff. And Jake is the id, which is aggression and pleasure seeking, which explains, I still think Jake probably asked the woman out at the museum, you know,
and was sitting on the floor in Egypt drinking the booze.
Drinking, maybe.
So we saw him.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible. I'll give you that it's possible.
All right. No, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know if that was intentional in the creation of the character, because the roles in the comic don't fit like that as cleanly.
Yeah.
But it definitely seems like it was intentional in the show.
Another thing I like about how they changed the show is in the comic, Steven is the millionaire. But in the show, I think it's Jake, because he's got Harrow in his fancy limousine, and it kind of makes sense to turn Jake into that instead of a cab driver. If he's the one who's aggressive and doesn't care about people, maybe he like worked his way up to being a millionaire or something like that.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I thought they were just using, you know, the cool imagery from the comic, you know, that maybe he stole that or whatever.
Could be. Yeah.
But wait a minute. Here's an idea. In the comic, he's a cab driver. What if in the show, he's a limo driver?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I mean, he did have like Didn't he have
not
like
such a great? Not, I made it sound like it was gonna be this great idea. You're like, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, like, whoa, like, okay, that blows that my mind. That isn't, no, that was actually what I first thought that he was a limo driver. But then I thought about it some more and I thought, it'd be cooler if he was the millionaire. But I guess we don't really know. But he seemed more like a limo driver the way he was dressed.
Well, I don't see how the millionaire thing seemed. The millionaire thing seems kind of hard to make work because one, he's not in possession of the body frequently enough to be able to kind of do that. You know what I mean? And maintain it and keep it separate and secret from them and everything else.
Yeah. Here's another like mind blowing revelation. I thought of that. If you combine Stephen and Mark, you get Stark.
Boom.
Whoa.
Boom.
All right.
Drop the mic. Drop
I think
the
we're
mic.
Done. We're done. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's time for some news. Here's an article about Jake Lockley from Marvel.com. I'll just read parts of it. In the end credit tag for the episode, it's revealed that Khonshu was never actually worried about losing Mark entirely as an avatar because he's got Jake. And clearly Jake will do all the tough, dirty things Mark or Steven never will. This might be the first time we're seeing Jake, but this isn't the first time he's been hinted at. All those times Mark and Steven blacked out at the end, neither one of them was in control. That third sarcophagus, all Jake. Head writer Jeremy Slater told Marvel.com, "We knew right from the beginning that fans were going to be on the lookout for references and clues that Jake Lockley is going to appear in the show. It's no surprise there are a lot of mirrors in the show and a lot of trios of mirror that might not have been noticed the first time around. Going far back as episode one, The Goldfish Problem, cinematographer Gregory Middleton points out that after Steven wakes up in bed following the cupcake truck chase, quote, there's a shot of a split of mirrors and there's barely this barely third reflection. Heading into episode two, some in the suit, Moorhead explains when Mark is talking to himself in the pyramid at the end of the episode, you'll notice it's actually a three-sided pyramid that are progressively more and more broken. Third side represents his rage. The one that he kicks out and smashes is actually a tiny, tiny little clue to look out for three instead of two. Episode three, the friendly type offers more clues to Jake's role in everything as racing through Cairo. Neither Mark nor Steven knows who's in control and carrying out some of these bloody deeds. Middleton offers more information there as, quote, Mohammed really wanted it to be the Jake of it all. Like, who did this other crime? This guy is obviously brutal. And by episode four, the tomb, there's a mysterious sarcophagus looming over Steven, blah, blah, blah. That is intended to be Jake. When Jake finally does arrive, it's a drawn out moment leading to a slow burn for the full reveal of just who has come to claim Arthur Harrow and wheel him away from the Senkevich Psychiatric Hospital. Jake literally says two sentences over the course of the entire scene, both in Spanish, but it's enough to send a shiver down anyone's spine. Having just completed nothing short of a marathon playing both Mark and Steven through the whole series, star Oscar Isaac was excited to let instinct guide him with Jake. Quote, I saw an opportunity to bring something of myself to it that's not just trying to pay service to some idea that was in the comics, he explains. The thought of he's just going to have the one line that he speaks, it should be in Spanish. There's something that's ominous about him, the kind of control that he has versus, you know, both Mark and Steven that have been so off foot. It just feels like it was just a really fun chance to let the instinct of, after having played these two guys, imagining what else could be in there and the excitement of shooting that scene. Director Diav, quote, loved that he's a Latino character, and even as Jake walks through the hospital pushing Harold's wheelchair, he's humming a Guatemalan hymn. And even though viewers only spend a few minutes with Jake, it's clear that, quote, this isn't Mark, so just imagine what's to come. Diab continues, I can't wait to see what's going to happen with the third completely different character with a completely different background. I mean, a lot of that is stuff we already talked about, but
yeah, I don't get why. So he's Latina.
Yeah. I mean, I think they suggested that Oscar Isaac just wanted to have him be something from himself because he's Latino, right? So to make him different.
And that's why he spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
Hmm. So now I see why you're thinking maybe when he talks in the New asylum York with the broken
yeah, that's
nose.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely wasn't marked though, but maybe, you know, maybe he does, you know.
Well, then, I played back that audio from the next scene where it was Mark and Steven talking to Tara, and he sounded like he was still having a little bit of that New York accent to me, but it was a brief line. So that's why I kind of think Mark just talks like that sometimes when he's like a little frantic. I don't know.
I don't know when he was saying, oh, you know, you're a good doc. You're a good doctor. Yeah, yeah. And, it was
super thick, so.
I feel like a million bucks. And, yeah, that's right. That's not how Mark talks. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, next. A Variety talked with director Mohamed Diab. They asked, did you know you wanted to end the show by introducing Jake Lockley? He says, everything you see in the show is a trial and error, a process that we all went through. There's so many things, like not completely different endings, but just let's stop here, let's stop here, let's stop here. I think maybe the third or fourth draft, everyone knew that this would be the very last scene. But how much of Jake we're seeing is something that we discussed for a longer time. I think we made the best decision. Everyone wants to know more about Jake, but if we would have introduced him in the show without really giving him the time to develop and be a full character like Mark and Steven, it wouldn't have been fair to him. I think now we open the door. I totally stole this. I do that all the time. That's but anyway, he goes, if there is an expansion one day, which I hope there is, which I don't know that there is, that could be a part of it. And Jake could have his time to shine.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool.
I think it would have been difficult in six episodes with the amount of story that they had to have had three of them run around trying to.
It was more fun to have it as this, like, what's going on with this third one?
Right. But I do think that the plot hole there is pretty big with the balancing of the heart.
Yeah.
The balancing of the hearts or the souls or whatever it was that they were balancing.
yes.
You know, I think that is a big plot hole.
Yeah. They're asking him, you know, the Jake scene certainly suggests there's more story to tell. He says, if you ask me, I would tell you that Moon Knight is here to stay. He's an interesting character. If you're Marvel, I think the smart business decision is to keep him. The only thing is Marvel's not traditional. If you succeed, it doesn't mean you're going to get a season two. By the way, I'm kept in the dark. I have no clue. I'm just thinking as a businessman right now, but I think they're going to stay. Maybe it's going to be a film. Maybe it's going to be a journey like what happened with WandaVision. I wish one day, if there's an expansion, I would be a part of it. We ended in a way that feels like a beginning. You see Mark and Steven becoming a new dynamic, the two of them in one body. We see Jake, you see the Scarlet Scarab, who could be a superhero or not. Very interesting stuff. So I would say let him be a part of it, right? He's so passionate and he did a great job on the series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a mistake not to have him be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. They go, the series does play with
although feature film is very different. So.
It is, yeah. I was going to say, I think he could do it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, who I know. Right. But I think also it's because of the timing stuff, sometimes people can't become available, you know?
Yeah,
right. For this, you know, if they, you know what I mean? Because they have to go on and make other projects and then Marvel decides, okay, now we want to do it. And it's like, I can't
contracted to do
something. Yeah. And supposedly I read too, that Oscar Isaac is only signed on for this at this point, but who knows? You know what I mean? But I mean, it's not like a lot of times, you know, you hear, Chris Evans signed on for seven movies.
Yeah.
You know what
so
I mean?
It's not like that. Yeah.
It's not like that. It's, you know, but he probably did that from a negotiating point of view. You don't want to commit, right? You know, if it's success, then you're like, hey, I need more money. You know what I mean?
I mean, some actors in different stations in life or of a different mindset would want to get a three-movie deal or something like that.
Right.
But I don't think Oscar Isaac is that guy. He knows he can get other work, and he's kind of weary of because of Star Wars, just being kind of burnt out on that kind of a thing. But hopefully he would do it. Okay, there's some really interesting ones here, so I'm going to read some more. They say, the series does play with the idea that all of this is in Mark's head. Do you feel like the show ends with a definitive answer to that question? He says, my answer is that this is a show that needs to be watched once and twice and three times. There's so many clues. Of course, he's going to say that. It's not clear what's real and what's not. For example, we saw his brother drawing a fish. So if this is the reality, then how come that Steven had a fish with one fin too? What inspired what? It's a loop. And I think a lot of clues are like that. He says, I always wanted it to be open. This is funny. I always told Kevin Feige I want to have an ending when we discover the whole MCU is in his head. So it's an open question. But I don't think it's an open question.
No, I don't think it's open either.
It's all real. He also talked about how they were going to have some crossover cameos, but then decided to keep it focused on Mark. So maybe that's
the big one I had heard here was the Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because that was the comic he was actually introduced in. Just like right. Wolverine was introduced in Hulk. And then Werewolf by Night is tied to the moon. So it kind of fit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a Moon Knight. He's a Werewolf by Night character. Or yeah. Punisher was in Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of my favorite Spider-Mans.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. From back in the day.
And one last one is New York Times interviewed Oscar Isaac. They said, do you get two paychecks for playing two roles on Moon Knight? He said, I should, man. It's funny because that's what I was apprehensive about. I didn't want it to feel like this masturbatory thing. When I started off, I was very adamant that I didn't want to do the gimmicky switching back and forth Jekyll and Hyde part of it. I really segregated Mark and Steven, even asked if we could shoot them on different days, just do it through reflections and don't ask me to put on a different hat.
That's kind of cool. I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really hard as an actor. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an actor, but I imagine it would be hard to get into the character's head and then turn around within the same scene and try to be in the other character's head. That just doesn't seem like it would be a good way to go about it.
I mean, I think it probably was good for him that they were more like that, switching back and forth towards the end of the series when he probably had a better grasp on each character, you know?
Yeah.
As a comics fan, did you feel like you were getting a B or C list character foisted on you? He says, yeah, they're pretty much down to the dregs. Although people said that for Iron Man too, then it changes cinema forever. And what an amazing performance that was.
Absolutely. I mean, Iron Man's the perfect example.
Yeah.
I mean, he was lucky. Who... He was lucky if he was C.
Yeah.
No one knew who Iron Man was.
People Iron Man was, don't even remember that. Unless you were a comic fan, you didn't know.
I mean, Iron Man was definitely low level.
But he goes, part of the attraction was is its obscurity, to be honest. Which is cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. He talks a lot about like they wanted to be true to dissociative identity disorder and did a lot of research on.
They did a great job on stuff. That.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess that's good.
It never felt exploitive. Never. To me. You know what I mean? In other words, like they were exploiting this illness to tell this, you know, this story. You know, it was, I never felt that way.
I mean, I think it's really good that they tried to represent it accurately within the context of this comic book-y show. But they did use it to tell a comic book story. So I don't know. I would be curious to know what people who actually have DID feel about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're probably right. All right. That's it for the news. How about some listener feedback?
Excellent. Penny Lennox says, I'm so bummed the season is over. Me too. These characters are interesting and layered, and the aesthetics of the production have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Totally, Penny.
Christopher Parent says, loved it. The Egyptian mythology had me intrigued throughout. Oscar Isaac was awesome. This show is in a close tie with WandaVision as my favorite of the MCU TV series. Right on.
Right on. I agree. Vince Pagano, what an awesome finish to an already awesome show. And thanks to you guys for the excellent in-depth convos about each episode. Looking forward to your thoughts on the finale. P.S., To those who haven't watched it already, the after-credits scene is probably one of the most crucial parts of the entire series. Be sure not to miss it.
Yeah.
I agree. And like I said, I think it's potentially one of the best season finales of all the shows.
Of all of them. Yeah. Christopher Parent and Vince Pagano, I don't know if I've heard from you before. Glad to see new people writing in.
Welcome, guys.
Welcome. Jamie Dimmick says, nothing really constructive to add, just that I want more. This is my favorite of the Marvel TV shows.
Yeah, that part of it is, the whole Disney Plus part is, that part of the whole Disney Plus experience is a little bit frustrating.
You know? That you don't get more?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're even delivering on what they had hoped to. And I suspect it's because of COVID. You know, but, you know, there were supposed to be like four or five shows every year and then three or four movies every year. And they're starting to get back to it. But it's tough. You know, well, it's tough.
I think
WandaVision came out when? 2 years
last
ago?
Year.
Oh, was it last January or February or something like that?
Something like that. And Captain America, Falcon Winter Soldier.
Now we're getting Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, which has her in it.
Yeah.
So her story continues, but it's been at least a year, maybe more.
Yeah. But we got WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, What If, Hawkeye, and Moon Knight, that's five. And we're getting I think She-Hulk this year, Ms. Marvel.
No, She-Hulk has been moved.
Oh yeah, that's right. To 2023, but we're getting Ms. Marvel,
Ms. Marvel.
Another one, right? And yeah, more. What if?
Yeah.
I don't know if Loki's going to be this year. Probably not, right?
No, next year. 23. I thought there was one other, but
yeah, I don't remember.
But in other words, the point I was trying to make is like WandaVision was over a year ago.
Yeah.
The continuation of that story is now going on in Doctor Strange: Multiverse of Madness. So a year, you know, 13, 14, 15 months is a long time. You know, I mean, it was hard enough as a kid going 30 days to wait for the next issue. Now as an adult, I got to wait a year and a half to 2 years.
Yeah. But I mean, anyway. I think of it like movies, you know, like.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. I'm just looking it up. WandaVision. Yeah. 2021 January. Yeah.
Yeah.
Year and a half. Okay, let's
Dublino, Bobby Grippy. Best finale for the best MCU show, I think. Oscar Isaac showed his skills and earned my respect. Off the top of my head, his other films, Annihilation, X-Men Apocalypse, sequel trilogy, didn't really tap into what he can do with a role. I think that's true. I mean, I've seen him in some great stuff. He was good in Dune. Yeah. He was good in Ex Machina. I don't know how to pronounce that.
But yeah, if you haven't seen Ex Machina, Dabalina,
that's
Bob
pretty
Rippy,
wild.
You should watch that. He's so good at that.
Plus, I also think the show paid respect to real life events, childhood trauma, and how the parents cope affect how the children also cope. Very true. Very true.
Mike Mulcahy says, lots of great action. Still not sure exactly what happened or how Mark made Steven turn back from stone. Yeah. I don't know exactly. He put that heart that was now full in his hand and that somehow.
Yeah. And then there was like this like merging of the two of them. There was this light that came out through their hands. And then behind them, the door, Cyrus opens the door so that they can go back.
Be resurrected. And I feel like that whole has to do with the theme of balance throughout the show, that they became balanced somehow, but I don't really know.
Now when he resurrects, he then like, I don't remember, is that, that's not where he makes the deal again with Khonshu though, right? Cause they're out on the mountaintop when they do that. They're outside.
He resurrects.
But in the tomb, he resurrects and then he leans forward and the bullets pop out of him.
Yeah.
So he's definitely
Khonshu
got.
Immediately senses him.
And, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Got it.
He goes on, but I enjoyed it enough. I was able to let that slide, which is not knowing what happened. That mid-credit scene goes straight into my top five for the Marvel mid/post-credit scenes and that's saying a lot. My girlfriend and I both shouted loudly in excited surprise when the limo window lowered. Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. That was a damn good post-credits scene.
Yeah. I love, too, that they put Khonshu in Mr. Knight's suit. You know?
Oh, yeah.
That's the first time we see him in that. And he's in that in the comics quite a bit, too. But I just thought it was kind of funny because, you know, first they're making fun of the suit. Now he digs the suit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool. It fits with the limo, too.
Shay Weed, great coverage for a great series. Oh, isn't that sweet? loved the depth. Loved the depth conversation. I wish there was a roll of scenes where we could see Jake's action scenes. Oh my God, that would be so freaking cool.
That'd be a great DVD.
Oh my
extra.
God, they should do that. They should definitely do that. What did he do in the final action scene? Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
He said, "Look over there." And then when Harold looked away, he killed him.
Well, like, plus look at like what Khonshu can do, like how he like kind of ghosts in and out of and like turns to almost like fog and moves really quick and he's almost like got hyper speed. I wonder if Moon Knight has those abilities and that he doesn't even realize it. I don't know. That'd be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Like the twist in the after credit scene, like the series, even though it in no way resembled what I expected. Oh, that's interesting. Sometimes what did you expect?
Yeah. Superman. Ben Woods says, "What an incredible and enjoyable finale. I loved it and had so many questions at the end, but the fantastic credit scene answered a few of those questions. The love and teamwork between Mark and Steven is awesome, and to see their relationship grow is really heartwarming. They really love each other. The scenes with Tararit trying to talk to Layla were enjoyable, and to see her become the Scarlet Scarab was really cool. I really love the series and can't wait to see more with these characters. Thanks so much for an informative and awesome podcast. You guys were great and helped me understand what the heck was happening. Thanks so much." Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben. Alma Contreras, "I thought it was a great episode. Welcome back, Khonshu. The scene with him battling the alligator goddess looked really cool. I got to go back and rewatch because I missed how Layla got her golden wings. Layla is fast becoming my favorite in the series." Yeah, I think she's underappreciated. "For a brief minute," she said. "When Mark could technically go on forward into heaven, I thought Layla was going to become the next Moon Knight. That would have been cool. As badass as she is, I would totally be okay with it. So there is another personality that neither Steven," I assume she means or Mark, "have been aware of. And I want to know why Mark did not finish off Harrow."
Yeah.
"All in all, this finale..." Jason's a supporter of that.
Bloodthirsty.
That's right. They're bloodthirsty bastards. "All in all, this finale was really great. I thoroughly have enjoyed this series, especially because of the podcast. Aww. Y'all really helped me get everything straight. I hope there is another season. P.S. I apparently missed the mid/post-credit scene." Oh my God. "So Mark and Steven have been unaware of the other personality, but Khonshu knew? Sneaky pigeon. LOL."
That's awesome. Jonathan Booklill says, "Hi guys, I mostly enjoyed the series and thought Oscar Isaac was as watchable as ever, but now I realize the complaints of Andrew Lincoln's accent were fair, as Oscar's English accent often made me laugh. It was a great exploration of the splintering of one's mind, but I kept asking, where is Moon Knight? Such a cool character, costume is amazing, but hardly did we see him, and when we finally did, it wasn't long before the main character was usurped by another. And of course, he had to be saved by the new, stronger, better character." I don't know if he's talking about Jake or Layla. He goes, "It's gotten a little repetitive with Disney now. Loki, Hawkeye, Boba Fett, and the upcoming Thor all seem like guests in their own series." Layla, "I like Scarlet Scarab, but I wish I got to know Moon Knight first. As always, though, the podcast was really enjoyable."
Thanks, Jonathan. Gail Cleary. "So happy Steven was only mostly dead." only mostly dead. "I love that they showed Mark could never be happy unless he was whole. Khonshu might have stopped Amat, but Khonshu is still evil. He has been manipulating Mark for a long time. He knows too much about Mark's brother and family. I think Khonshu killed Mark's brother and somehow helped drive his mother insane so that he could break Mark's mind and turn him into Khonshu's version of an ideal avatar." Yeah, interesting too that Ahmed talks about I've had a perfect avatar. That didn't work out too good. You know what I mean? It's kind of like almost like a wink to the fact that, you know, Kanchi's been through that and he's figured out how to fix that problem. Mm-hmm. This seems confirmed in the post-credit scene with Jake. Jake is Kanchi's instrument. Mark is second banana and Steve is the idiot.
It's another way to look at it.
Yeah. Kanchi, as opposed to the id and the ego and all that.
Super ego or idiot.
Super ego or idiot. Kanchi never would have gotten Jake without Mark and enduring years of horrendous abuse. If we see more of Moon Knight, I hope it's about Mark and Steven realizing this and working to somehow free Jake from Khonshu's grasp. Makes me wonder how many times Jake was killed and resurrected by Khonshu and if that will complicate things even more. Thanks for the pod. That's a great observation too. Thanks for the podcast. I love hearing your thoughts and theories. So thank you.
Thanks, Gail. Yeah, it's so interesting. It's a different kind of hero where one third of his personality is a bad guy. We got to see more of that.
Absolutely.
And then finally, Lara Willie Swink writes in, my overall reaction to the Moon Knight, this has now upset Hawkeye as my favorite Disney Plus series and also tops quite a few of the Marvel films as well. I do believe that they stuck the landing, but with the tiniest bit of a wobble at the end in that the finale seemed a bit too short and a bit too rushed. I would have liked a few scenes like the killing of the avatars to have had a little room to breathe. So much was resolved while still leaving loads of story on the table for us to want more. What did we learn? Interdimensional telecommunications via corpse gets better service than my cell phone provider. The gods are apathetic jerks who just got all their avatars killed. Unlike Khonshu and Taret, Amit has no flair for fashion. As Harrow is left in his old man jammies while Layla gets the most badass costume in the MCU.
Nice.
Questions I still have and would love to see resolved in a season 2 or live action film. 1. Who really killed Layla's father? We never meet Bushman, so I still maintain my theory that it might have been Mark. Well, actually, as we know now, Jake, who could have done it, and Mark may never have even known. I think that's what happened. I mean, all those
I think
dead
that's
bodies.
A good twist, but I think everybody's expecting that. So,
yeah. 2. Where is Layla now, and what did she see when Mark and Steven blacked out? She saw him go nuts.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
What was that?
Right,
like Wolverine but
I think
rage.
That's also a little bit of a plot hole too, because why wouldn't she say, you know, especially if he's got a different suit?
She did say. I mean, she goes, "What was that?"
Well, true.
Yeah, I think that was like
that was confirmation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. 3. What is the status of Layla and Mark/Steven/Jake's relationship now? Can they even have one? And would that be considered polygamy?
you and Laura think alike.
I know. Maybe Layla needs to develop another personality. No, I'm just kidding. And then she says, lastly, I have a theory. In the end scene, Mark and Steven have finally come to live in unity with each other and wake up in Steven's London flat, where there are now 2 goldfish in the aquarium. I was wondering to myself, why are they still tethered to the bed when Steven knows now that it wasn't sleepwalking that he was suffering from? Then it dawned on me that Mark and Steven have been mentally tethered to a safe and recognizable space within Mark's psyche, similar to the asylum, while Jake has taken over the body. Like the 2 goldfish in the aquarium, they are being caged and sheltered while Jake has been off causing havoc for who knows how long. I think whatever additional storylines come next, it will need to address Mark and Steven breaking their way out of their mental prison and reckoning with Jake. Still so much story to explore. Come on, Disney, tell us soon when we're going to get more Moon Knight and more Oscar Isaac. Thanks, gents, for your excellent coverage. I really enjoyed the deep dives and on-point theories.
I love her comment, like the 2 goldfish in the aquarium. I didn't even make that correlation.
Of what? I did not understand.
They're trapped in a tank. They're trapped in a tank.
Okay. I don't understand.
Now they're together. Now they're together, which is great, but they're still trapped in a tank.
Still trapped.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a couple of calls. One from Greg.
Okay, so Moon Knight series finale, episode 6, Gods and Monsters. This is Greg. First of all, I really liked it. I thought the action was amazing. I thought that the drama was well put together. The only complaint I have, and it's kind of a big one in the series as a whole, as opposed to this individual episode, it just seemed like everything kind of got tied up in a nice, neat little bow. Oh, Amit is destroying the people in the city and getting bigger and bigger because she's eating all of the souls and all that. And then, oh, okay, sweet. We got this one little thing. We just got to do this. And we happen to have all the appropriate people here to do it and all the avatars. And okay, yeah, we'll go and just do this. And thank God we had this plan in place to do it, because that would have been a real pain in the ass. But, like, thank God no one thought to prevent us from doing this. Seeing Tawaret's avatar in Layla, temporary avatar, was amazing. I just didn't think that it was, I felt like it wasn't enough. Maybe it's just that I want more, but maybe that it was just, I feel like it was just too easily tied up. Anyway, look forward to the podcast. Bye.
I can see that maybe it was too easy to defeat Amit just by casting that spell. Well,
the solution, just, you know, if they had developed that plan over an episode or two slowly, but instead it was more like, oh, well, we can do this.
Right.
And then quick, grab us and we'll just do this. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I agree.
And one last call from Eric.
Hey, Jason and Kirk. This is Eric. So I guess that's a wrap on Moon Knight Season 1. Overall, I really enjoyed the season. Was cautiously optimistic going in, because I know Moon Knight isn't the most popular or the most recognized character in the Marvel Universe. But when I heard Oscar Isaac was going to have a starring role, you know, I had a bit more faith in the possibilities that the show had. And, you know, I was worried it might be a bit low budget, you know, considering, you know, Moon Knight not being the most recognized character. But, you know, I think they did much, much better than you know, I even hoped that they were going to do. You know, I feel like they pulled out all the stops here in the finale with the giant battle between the gods, you know, amongst the pyramids. That was totally awesome. You know, the last episode of Asylum, nearly brought me to tears, and loved the post credit scene where we finally got to see Jake Lockley, got the Spectre limo, got Khonshu in a suit, and I just can't wait to see where Moon Knight pops up next. Loved your guys' coverage. Thanks for the show, guys.
Thanks, that's Eric. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
Eric's the one who sent me the collected Jeff Lemire run on Moon Knight. So thanks, man. Right. Glad you called in at the end here.
I've been looking for that the last couple of weeks. I want to.
Oh, is it sold out everywhere?
Yeah, nobody's got it. That nobody locally. I mean,
I could loan it to you if you can't find it.
Hey, I'm game.
All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you, Kirk. That's been really cool.
No, thank you.
I'm glad you wanted to do this.
Yeah, it was a blast. I had a blast, and I really appreciate you asking me to join you on it. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Good. I'm glad. Thanks again also to everybody who listened. We appreciate you guys, and we were pleasantly surprised by all the great interaction, more people writing in and stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot, and I think that's wonderful.
It's really cool.
That always makes it a lot better.
If you guys enjoyed that, you might like our What If podcast. Season 1 is up. I did all of those with the rotation of co-hosts, and Kirk was in a couple of them. Which ones did you do? The last one, right? Or maybe it was second to last, the Ultron.
Yeah, I think it was the Ultron. The early one, though, was, I think it was...
Was it the one where everybody died?
No, it was the zombie one.
No.
No, didn't do the zombie one?
I did, but that was, I remember that was Daphne and Wendy. Anyway, they're all
I
fun.
Don't remember.
I love that series.
Yeah, it was great.
So
I enjoyed it.
Check that out.
I had a good time.
Also, we cover a ton of other stuff right now. We're doing Ozark, Better Call Saul, and From Epics, and later this month, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Stranger Things, and a whole bunch of stuff coming later, Mandalorian.
And I just did the art for the Stranger Things cast.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's Ryan, great. For Raymond Chung, the, what do you call it? Monster. I forget its name.
Demogorgon.
Yeah, that's right.
spitting at the camera.
Yeah, I love that. You can find all those at podcastica.com. Next episode of this podcast, nothing. But if...
If it comes back
or appears in a movie or something, we will talk about it. And if you are up for some more What If, I'd love to have you come back and do that.
I would love to do. Yeah, cool. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And don't forget to check out Kirk's stuff at studiokm.com.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks, appreciate everybody.
It. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.